The 0-2 pitch, swing and a miss, knocked him out. The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball.
Hey, welcome, Chet. Here we go. We ready to roll?
Yes, sir.
All right. Let's get this thing going. It's Wednesday, April 20th, 2016. Welcome to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable, brought to you by shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. I'm Bill Furman. I'll be your host tonight, along with my partner, Jim Chetchesco. And Chet, we had a big plan worked out to talk about tonight regarding the 2016 Eagles draft, and at about 2 o'clock today, it blew up. A crazy, crazy day.
Yeah, just before 2 o'clock, Bill, my phone started making all sorts of noises and vibrations, and we, of course, got the news that our birds made a big, big trade that we'll be talking about on our show right now, but who knows, maybe we'll be talking about this trade for a couple of years.
Yeah, well, we've been looking forward to this show for weeks with our special guest, Eagles draft guru Fran Duffy, joining us for the third straight year, and Fran is with us, but we're going to shift gears a little bit from our plan. We're still going to be covering everything that we were going to, but I think we're going to talk a little bit about quarterbacks.
Yeah, how could we not, Bill? The Eagles traded up to number 2 overall and came right out and told us they will be drafting a quarterback, but that Sam Bradford remains the starter. So, yeah, certainly plenty to talk about this evening.
Well, before we get started, we want to let our listeners know that we will not have our Carl's Cards and Collectibles trivia question tonight so that we can pick Fran's brain for everything we can throughout the entire show. So we will have our shopforkisses.org phone lines open for the entire show to ask Fran any questions you might have. So that number is 929-477-2855. That's 929-477-2855. So with that business out of the way, welcome back, Fran Duffy.
Oh, thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it. I always enjoy it.
Fran, it has been crazy day. Before you hit with lots of questions, just so our listeners are aware, could you explain again exactly what it is you do with the Eagles and the various podcasts you're on each week?
Sure. So I'm the video content manager with the Eagles, and in that role, basically I just work with all of our video and audio content that we produce for the site and for all of our digital platforms. So any video pieces that you see, and really what I really take pride in the most is all of our X's and O's content, our football analysis content. So obviously I produce a lot of that myself. I write, I host a number of podcasts. I host my own podcast, the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast, which actually a new one just went up earlier today. I had former Eagle linebacker Ike Reese on. I'm also on the Journey to the Draft podcast, and so that's a weekly show that, you know, all through year, and these are all year-round shows. I'm on the College Draft podcast with myself and Ross Tucker. I do that away from the Eagles, and that's another one where it's talking about college football and the NFL draft all year round. So those three podcasts, the Eagles Insider podcast as well, I'm on it from time to time. So definitely a lot to talk about year-round. That's why I love NFL. That's why I love football, and that pretty much sums it up, though. A lot of X's and O's content, a lot of writing and podcast.
And just out of curiosity, about how much football videotape have you watched since January?
I couldn't even tell you how many hours, honestly. It's been a lot. I want to say, as a guesstimate, I want to say it's probably reached about 375 prospects so far. Wow. And obviously it didn't start in January. I do try and watch year round just so I can stay on top of it. But yeah, I want to say I'm about that far.
All right. Well, we're glad to have you with us again tonight. So, Bill, take it away. Ask that first question.
Well, Fran, I was going to ask you this before the trade, but I'll rephrase it and ask it a different way. You know, there's been a lot of conversation with the Howie Roseman, Chip Kelly situation. Well, it's Howie's draft. It's Chip's draft. It was Andy's draft. Now we have this big trade in front of us. What are the mechanics that take place in the draft room or in these discussions? I'm thinking certainly the head coach and probably the staff are involved in this, but ultimately the general manager is the one that pulls the trigger. Am I right on that?
Well, you know, it's always a collaboration. And I think Howie has always done such a good job of explaining what his role is in that situation. You know, and his staff serves the coaching staff in that he's not going to draft players. They're not in the business of drafting players and acquiring talent that doesn't fit what the coaches want, right? If a coach says, you know, I want a linebacker that's a run and chase type player, they're not going to draft a guy that's 250 pounds and runs a 4.8. You know, they're looking for certain types. Everybody's trying to win games. They're all trying to win the Lombardi Trophy. Everyone, we want to keep going, steering the same direction. So from position by position, whenever there's a new coach brought in, and obviously this year with the coaching change, there's lots of new coaches coming in. There's completely different schemes on both sides of the football. One of the very first things that happens is the coaching staff gets together with the scouting staff and says, here's what we're looking for at each position. These are the, you know, whether it's body types or physical skill sets at each position on each side of the ball. And now that allows the scouts to go out and say, okay, here's my evaluations of everybody in my area or where I'm the position that I'm working on. And now it allows everyone to make a collective decision. And so, you know, they talked today, you know, Howie Roseman talked about it in his press conference today. They made the decision that they wanted to be aggressive in going up and trying to get a quarterback that, you know, they're not often in this position, you know, just selecting this high in the draft. So strike while the iron's hot, go up and get that level prospect because, look, chances are you're not going to be in this kind of situation again in the coming years.
All right, so in case somebody is just joining us and has not heard the news today, what happened was the Eagles acquired the number 2 overall pick in next Thursday's draft through a trade with the Browns. The Eagles gave up their number 8 overall pick plus 3rd and 4th round picks in 2016, a 1st round pick next year, and a 2nd round pick in 2018. They also receive a 4th round pick next year. Now, the assumption, of course, is that the Rams will take a quarterback with the 1st overall pick, likely Jared Goff, leaving the Eagles to take, likely, Carson Wentz at number 2. So, Fran, Wentz certainly has all the tools, great size, a great arm, but the big concerns are that he played at a small school, North Dakota State, and he was the starter only the last 2 seasons. Are they legitimate concerns, and what's the upside for Carson Wentz?
I think the upside's very high for Carson Wentz, you know, because you see the physical tools, and they're certainly there. 5, he's almost 240 pounds, he's a big kid, he's a good athlete, got a good arm, he's accurate, good decision-maker, and really, honestly, the big thing that's always stood out to me with Carson Wentz are the mental traits. You know, and he had full autonomy at the line of scrimmage. He was given everything pre-snap in terms of what the play call was going to be, except the protection. He set all the protections all year long for North Dakota State when he was in the game. Obviously, he had the injury mid-season that caused him to miss most of the second half of the season. He came back, won the national championship game for them back in December. But a guy that had full autonomy at the line of scrimmage, and you saw that on tape. One of my favorite plays, honestly, and it's not often that I'll say one of my favorite quarterback plays is a running play. There was a play, guys, against Weber State. It was in September, and they showed a blitz. They were on the 25-yard line. Weber State comes out. They show a blitz from the right side. He goes to the line of scrimmage. Wentz does, changes the play up, calls a quarterback run to the left. He runs 26 yards for a touchdown. And that's the kind of thing, the pre-snap ability to be able to see, okay, this is what the defense is doing. How can I best put my offense in position to move the football down the field? He did that repeatedly. That was just one instance, but did that a number of different times for North Dakota State. And my good friend Greg Cosell from NFL Films obviously has been doing this for a long, long time. And Greg will tell me, look, it doesn't matter where you do it. It doesn't matter who you do it against. It's how you do it. What exactly, you know, and by that, he played at North Dakota State, sure. But we see players come from small schools every single year in the draft and thrive in the NFL, even early as rookies. It's really, if you have talent, the NFL is going to find you, and they're going to leverage you to the best of your ability.
Got it.
Well, Fran, let's say in Chet's scenario, it goes the other way. Carson Wentz goes to the Rams. Jared Goff becomes available. What's your breakdown of Jared Goff?
You know, Jared Goff is a really intriguing player, too, and he didn't have the same authority at the line of scrimmage that Wentz did just because they played in different offenses. Goff came from the air raid at Cal, played for Sonny Dykes. He started 37 games over the last 3 years, which is a very high number. Again, he's only played 3 years. He started every single game he played in. Really interesting player in terms of the physical skill set, too. I mean, he's got pretty light feet. He's got a good arm, one of the stronger arms in the draft. Really great touch, and he made some of the best throws you could see a quarterback make this year. One of the touchdowns he threw against Arizona State down at the pylon was just outstanding. It was from 30-plus yards out. You see the mobility as well, the ability to work. Once things break down in the pocket, I remember a touchdown throw he made against Texas where he faced interior pressure. He stepped up into it. It came into his face. He rolled to his left, found a receiver rolling out that direction, and hit him in stride for a touchdown. You see the mobility. You see the accuracy. A really efficient quarterback, too, was really good in the red zone throughout his career. He only had one red zone interception his entire career at Cal. Was very efficient on third down as well. So they both are very, very good quarterback prospects. Now it's just a matter of who's going to fall. And the Eagles, obviously, they have an idea of who that player might be, but we won't know for sure until draft night. The good thing is they feel very, very confident. You can't make this trade today without feeling confident in both quarterbacks to lead your team moving forward.
Now, prior to this trade, the Eagles, of course, had the eighth pick, and it was talked they would take either offensive lineman Ronnie Stanley or maybe the running back Ezekiel Elliott. Of course, that's not going to happen now, but I think they still do need a running back. So maybe round three or four, possible backs available. Kenneth Dixon of Louisiana Tech, Josh Ferguson of Illinois, Alex Collins of Arkansas. I think it was Mel Kiper who had the Birds taking Collins in the third round. What are your thoughts about these guys and other running backs in the mid-rounds?
You know, Collins is interesting. He's a physical kid. He's got a burst to him. He didn't test well at the combine, but definitely one of the more interesting backs in the class because he offers third down value right away. Was a really physical blocker. I remember one play against Alabama this year. He was in pass protection, and he just leveled Alabama defensive tackle A'shaun Robinson and, you know, just knocked him right on his back. It was a really, really impressive play. You know, the question with Collins is, and this is why I think he'll fall a little bit, there are some off-the-field issues, had some issues there at Arkansas, but then also his vision. You know, there were times where, yeah, he's really decisive. He sees the hole and he hits it downhill. Other times he danced a little bit too much at the point of attack. So that'll be an issue for him. Some really interesting players, though, guys, in this running back group. Next year's class is going to be star-studded with guys like Fournette, Nick Chubb, and Dalvin Cook. But this year's class has a lot of talent, too. And we tell you, you know about Ezekiel Elliott. He's one of the easiest players in this draft class to scout. But, you know, you look at a guy like Kenneth Dixon, Louisiana Tech, really competitive runner, great receiver out of the backfield, a really deceptive athlete as well. Jonathan Williams from Arkansas, Collins' teammate, I love this kid. You know, he didn't play the whole season because of a foot fracture he suffered back in August. But, you know, he's 5'11", 220 pounds, has deceptively quick feet, really another guy who's really competitive, can be a third down back because he can catch the ball out of the backfield as well as hold up in pass protection. C.J. Procise from Notre Dame is a really dynamic kid, a former receiver who they just moved to running back, you know, what is it now, eight, 9 months ago. You know, you mentioned a couple other names there. Josh Ferguson, another one of those change of pace type players, a good receiver out of the backfield, a little bit undersized. But, you know, it just depends on what the Eagles are looking for. If they need one of those change of pace type players or if you're looking at a guy who could potentially carry the load, if that's the case, you're looking at more of a guy like Williams or Collins or even Dixon, I think, can be a feature back in the NFL because they're a little bit bigger.
Well, Fran, we're going to be sitting here, well, we're assuming, obviously, we're going to pick a quarterback at number two. Now we have three quarterbacks we're paying a lot of money to. We've got a fan base that, from everything I could tell at this point, is very not happy. We'll say not happy at this point because they gave up so much. I'm going to go the other way and say we're not done yet. We're going to trade one of those other two quarterbacks, and we're going to get some of those draft picks back and get back in the hunt. Do you see that as a possibility?
No, I think Sam Bradford is going to be the starting quarterback this year. You know, when they break camp, I think he's going to be the starter at quarterback. And here's the great thing about this trade, right? They traded up to number two and still right now have seven draft picks this year, and next year still have eight picks in next year's draft. So the fact that they were able to move from 13, where they started initially, up to number two, still have a full boatload of picks both this year and next year, I think that they're in really good shape. Now, obviously, some of these picks you came in not having a second this year. You gave up one of the extra thirds that you had this year. You gave up a fourth, but you have some extra picks on the back end on day three. But you have the ability to move around a little bit. You have the ability to add more depth on the back end of the roster, some developmental players, because they did a great job in free agency with some of the players they brought in, Brandon Brooks and Rodney McLeod, Nigel Bradham, players, Ruben Randall, guys that are established veterans in the NFL that you can count on. Right now, if you want to try and compete for an NFC East crown, you know you've got guys that can line up and play right now. Now let's go out and get some players that we can develop. And so you're going to look in some of these later rounds this year and say, okay, let's find some players that we feel really good about their upside. We know we've got a staff full of coaches that can develop talent. And that's something, honestly, the last staff didn't do a great job, honestly, of developing talent from day three. You look at some, day one, day two, honestly, the draft picks were pretty good. You look at guys like Jordan Hicks and Zach Ertz and Benny Logan, really good contributors over the last couple of draft classes. But once you get to day three, over the last 3 years, not a lot of impact players. You could probably make the argument the best day three player drafted, back since Lane Johnson's draft was Taylor Hart a couple years ago. So they want to get more of an impact out of day three. I'll be really, really anxious to see who they snare, because this has got some good depth in this draft, especially at positions of need. I think that you look at the interior offensive line, and obviously that was a huge sore spot for the Eagles last year. You can go into round three, round four, round five, and you can see a guy like Evan Bain from Mizzou or Christian Westerman from Arizona State, Max Turk from USC. I think that kid would have been a second-round pick if he had stayed healthy. He tore his ACL back in October. You look at guys like Cody Whitehair. Could Cody Whitehair fall to round three? Joe Dahl from Washington State is a tackle guard prospect that I think has a lot of upside as well, kind of built like a Joe Batonio, Zach Martin type player. It's a really intriguing interior offensive line class. There's a Caleb Benenock kid from UCLA. I think he's got a lot of talent. It's a really good guard class. I think that they'll be able to find somebody that can come in, and if he's not starting right away, you've got Wisniewski, who just signed a few weeks ago, that can come in and start immediately, and you can bring this guy along slowly. Can they find a linebacker? Can they find a guy like a Tyler Matakevich out of Temple on day three that can come in? You don't need to start him right now. You have Nigel Bradham. You have Jordan Hicks. You've got Michael Kendricks. Let's bring those guys along and let's develop them and have them ready to go 2017, 2018.
I'm glad you talked about some of the offensive linemen who might be available mid-rounds, because, obviously the top guys, the Laramie Tunsils and the Ronnie Stanleys, are going to be long gone by the time the Eagles get another pick down at 79 or whatever it is. Just out of curiosity, most of us, Fran, can spot a good quarterback or a wide receiver or running back or even a linebacker or a defensive back, but it's sometimes tougher for the untrained eye to say, yeah, that guy's a great offensive tackle, or he's a real good guard. What exactly do you look for when, grading these guys out and deciding whether to use a high pick on an offensive lineman?
For starters, you need to be tough in the NFL. And there are so many guys, offensive linemen, that come in that, yeah, they're great athletes, but they don't have the toughness. And you can go even as early as Jonathan Cooper. A couple years ago, he was a top 10 pick for the Arizona Cardinals. 2 years later, he shipped out because, outstanding athlete. I remember watching him when he was in North Carolina and just being amazed by how easily that guy moved at 300 pounds. But the other thing about all this is you never know how guys are going to react mentally. So once they're a high draft pick and they're given money and time that they didn't have at the college level, and we could do a whole podcast just on that. But really the big thing is you're trying to find guys that are tough. Depending on your coaching staff, you want to find guys that maybe are a little bit more technically savvy. Because it just depends on how your staff is built. If you've got a really good teacher at the offensive line spot, somebody that can coach a guy on pad level and where his hands are and just things of that nature, now you have less to work with in terms of, for instance, Juan Castillo, when he was here. Juan Castillo always, for all the Andy Reid years, you would always count on them bringing in an offensive lineman in the late rounds or as an undrafted free agent, and he'd be able to work with him and try and really bring him along. And eventually those guys would turn to starters. Think of Jamal Jackson and Artis Hicks and some of those guys, coming back, the Doug Brzezinskis of the world, the John Wellborns of the world, guys that weren't first and second round picks that turned into starters. if you've got coaches like that, and that's just not on the offensive line, in any position, you just have to know your staff. And if they're good teachers up front, then you know that you can work with guys that maybe have high upside. But otherwise, you're looking for guys that are tough. You're looking for guys that have the feet to be able to hold up, especially a tackle. They need to have good feet to be able to hold up against the speed in the NFL. And you just need the technique, because if you don't have good technique in the NFL, you're going to get beat. And that's honestly a big thing when you get to the league is, you can be tough, but if you don't play with good technique, you can look at the kid Ereck Flowers this year for the New York Giants. They took him in the top 10 this year, and his issue at Miami was his technique. He had great feet. He was a big kid. He had good strength, but his hands were all over the place. His timing and his drive and his kick slide was all over the place. His forward lean and his stance pre-snap was all over the place, so he was always late off the ball. That held over. That carried over to the league this year, and he gave up a huge amount of sacks. He gave up a sack and a half to Marcus Smith back in Week 17. He's had all kinds of issues. So technique is certainly another thing that you're looking for in terms of the offensive line group.
Well, Fran, the trade today blew up my whole philosophy, because my thinking was that the Eagles had signed a lot of offensive players, you know, in the preseason. And while everybody was thinking which offensive player they were going to draft, I was thinking they were going to go defense. Goes to show how little I know. But with that, you know, each year I try to have my favorite guy. And C.J. Mosley I had the year before, a couple years ago, and that turned out pretty well. Rashad Perryman I had last year, and that hasn't turned out very well yet, at least. Miles Jack was my guy this year. What do you think about Miles Jack? Is he an impact kind of player?
You know, he's a really interesting case study, Bill, because, you know, it's 6'1", 245 pounds. He's got, you know, solid size. His athleticism is off the charts. And it just comes down to how are you going to use him? And the big thing you have to answer first is, how do you feel about the knee? And that's going to be the big thing. He went to the medical recheck last week out in Indianapolis. And teams are putting him through the paces again, seeing how that knee surgery is held up. He tore his meniscus back in early October. So now how does that knee look? If teams feel comfortable with that, then they're going to still draft him high. All the reports from Indianapolis are saying not everybody's convinced. And so there are going to be some teams that are going to pass. As the saying goes, it only takes one. So, you know, if the New York Giants feel good about it, maybe at 10, maybe they're going to take one. If the Dallas Cowboys, maybe they had him on the field. They had him ranked as the number one player on their draft board. But if they see Miles Jack and say, you know, we don't feel good about the knee, they're going to pass. So, and that's going to be the case with every team. Everybody's got different injury reports. Everyone's got different medical exams. So we're going to see how that stock is affected there for Miles Jack. But on the field, I mean, just an outstanding athlete. I mean, the guy last year as a sophomore, they put him one-on-one against Nelson Agholor in the slot in the game against USC. The year before, Miles Jack's freshman year, they put him one-on-one on the outside against Marquise Lee, who was a second-round pick of the Jacksonville Jaguars. So you have a guy who played safety, he played in the slot, he played off-the-ball linebacker, he was a blitzer off the edge, he played running back, obviously, as well, but, you know, he's going to be a defensive player in the NFL. Every team's going to have to decide, how are you going to use Miles Jack? What is he going to be in your base package? What is he going to be in your sub-package? How is he going to impact your football team? Because, look, he's a great athlete, but he's not going to cover Antonio Brown. He's not going to cover, you know, DeSean Jackson. He's not that, you know, otherwise he'd be a slot corner. You're going to get a slot corner or an outside corner to defend those guys. How is he going to impact your sub-package? And that's going to be really, really fun to watch. And I'm really, really into the strategy, the X's and O's stuff. That, like I said earlier, I'm really excited to watch how Miles Jack is acclimated to the NFL.
Yeah, and to follow up on that real quick, the thing that's exactly what I liked about him too. I just thought it would give a coordinator so many opportunities, so many options they could do with him. They could blitz him, they could bring him off the edge, stick him on the inside a little bit, or put him in some sort of a pass coverage. You never know where the guy was gonna show up, and I thought it would really give a coordinator a lot of opportunities.
Yeah, no, and that's the thing is you get so much flexibility with a guy like that. That being said, though, I would say that it would probably be unrealistic to expect that he'll be what he was at UCLA in terms of, you know, 1 week. You can watch week one against against Virginia this year. He was a stacked linebacker. You know, he was Luke Kuechly, he was Michael Kendricks, he was off the ball, and he was playing downhill. And then the following week, he played the entire game in the slot. That's not going to happen in the NFL. He's not going to be a slot corner in the NFL. So now it's just a matter of, all right, how is he going to be used? The team's going to have a plan in place, hopefully, and that comes down to the collaboration between the scouting staff and the coaches. Hopefully they have some kind of a plan in place for that kid when he arrives on campus.
Hey, friend, we were talking about quarterbacks earlier, Goff and Wentz likely to go 1 and 2 in whatever order. Paxton Lynch probably a mid-first or late first-round pick. But there's so many other quarterbacks who have been talked about, especially when the Eagles were maybe in the running for one in the mid-rounds. Guys like Connor Cook out of Michigan State, Dak Prescott, Mississippi State, whom Ray Dinger, by the way, spoke very highly of on our show last week, Christian Hackenberg of Penn State, Jacoby Brissett, NC State. Any guys, Kevin Hogue, any of those guys you particularly like?
You know what, when I'm watching quarterbacks, guys, the big thing that I'm looking for are those pro-style situations. And I mentioned one with one with Goff and Wentz. You talk about the pre-snap stuff, talking about working in the pocket. And that's where the NFL game is won and lost for quarterback, is inside the pocket. So, you know, it's great to see guys running around. You see guys like Cardale Jones running around and making plays on the move. And we've seen that in the past with a Johnny Manziel. That's great at the college level, but it does not fly that way in the NFL. So you always want to be able to see guys work in the pocket. Guys like Kevin Hogan. And Kevin Hogan, his physical tools are not great. His release at Stanford was really bad. And he's got through that. He's been working on it in the offseason. We'll see now if that can stick once he starts playing in the game. But, you know, you see a guy work in the pocket with bodies around him. Can he stay calm? Can he keep his eyes downfield? Do his feet go astray? You know, all about the lower body mechanics. And then just in terms of his mental processing, can he see things quickly? Can he throw with anticipation? Is he looking receivers off? Those are the things that you need to be able to do to win at the NFL level. I saw that from Kevin Hogan on numerous occasions. I saw that from Connor Cook often at Michigan State, a guy that played. He started 39 games during his time with the Spartans. A lot of people have made a big deal about how he wasn't a captain, which is a legitimate, it's a legitimate question. You don't often see a three-year starter quarterback never be named a captain. You know, and that's just questions that every team's going to have to answer for themselves. You know, I have questions about Prescott coming from the system that he came from. He has physical tools. He's a great kid, and everybody's going to have to look at that a different way. He's got the tools, but you're going to need to mold them. It's like we talked about with the offensive line group. If you've got a quarterback coach that is a great teacher and a developer, and you've got a situation where he can come in and learn in 3 years, you may have something there in Dak Prescott in time. But I like to look at guys that really show those traits in college. And to me, that's Christian Hackenberg, that's Kevin Hogan, that's Connor Cook, that's Jacoby Brissett from NC State. Jeff Driscoll from Louisiana Tech has really impressed me this year. After transferring from Florida, I kind of wrote him off, but this year I thought he had a great year with Louisiana Tech. Nate Sudfeld from Indiana as well. It's a really deep quarterback class. You know, over the last 5 years, an average of 11 guys have gotten drafted every year. I expect that number to be 13, 14 this year. I think it's a pretty good group overall.
Well, friend, looking at the NFC East, we've got the Cowboys at number 4, the Giants at number 10, the Redskins at 21. You know, it looks like Dallas is going to have an opportunity if they go defense to go. They've got Ramsey, they've got Bosa, they've got Buckner, they've got Jack, all going to be available probably. Hargraves. They've got Ronnie Stanley or Ezekiel Elliott if they decide to go offense. Where do you see these three teams headed in that first round?
To me, I think if you look at Dallas, it's been no secret around the league that they covet Jalen Ramsey. That's their guy. There were rumors before the two trades in the top five that they were even thinking about trading from 4 to 1 to take Jalen Ramsey out of Florida State. So I would be surprised if they didn't come out of this draft with Ramsey. Now, it's entirely possible that San Diego takes Ramsey. And if they do, if Dallas can't find a trade partner to move back, I would expect that, especially now, look, you lose Randy Gregory. They're not bringing back Greg Hardy. DeMarcus Lawrence apparently is going to get suspended. That was a lot of the rumors that was out late this afternoon. Wouldn't surprise me at all if they went Joey Bosa or even DeForest Buckner. So I would say Ramsey is plan A. If they can't, then trade back as plan B, with plan C being a defensive end pass rusher to come off the board there for Dallas. When you look at the Giants, they've got a number of needs. It's an older roster at this point. A lot of the draft picks that they've brought in haven't necessarily worked out. A lot of people have linked them to wide receiver, potentially a guy like Laquon Treadwell. You know, I wouldn't be surprised, honestly, if you saw Ezekiel Elliott land there. Unless a team finds a way to trade up, if it's Miami or Tennessee or somebody else moves up into the top 10, it wouldn't shock me at all to see Ezekiel Elliott end up as a New York Giant. And I know a lot of fans that wanted Ezekiel Elliott here in Philadelphia will be upset to hear about that. But that wouldn't surprise me at all to see him end up there as the feature back there with the Giants. As far as Washington, you know, they're picking 21. They've got a lot of different ways that they can go, and I'm really intrigued to see which direction they go. But they need some depth in the front seven. You know, they lost Terrence Knighton. They lost Jason Hatcher, who they released earlier this year. They don't have necessarily a true pass rusher opposite Ryan Kerrigan, but could they go edge rush with a guy like Leonard Floyd? That's possible. I think Floyd is better than the 21st overall pick. I think he should go higher, but that remains to be seen. I think that they're going to go somewhere in the front seven. A guy like Jaron Reed to me from Alabama or A'shaun Robinson, a guy that can play. You know, they have a base 3-4, but obviously we know sub-packages are the way of today's NFL. Teams play in their sub-packages and nickel or dime 65% of the snaps on average this past season. So can a guy play 3-4 D-end or nose tackle in your base down and then still stay on the field in sub-packages? That's why I would take one of these Alabama kids over a guy like Andrew Billings out of Bell or someone that some people have had ranked really, really high throughout the process as a top 10, top 15 talent. He's your basic nose tackle. He's incredibly strong, but doesn't have much value on third down as a pass rusher. And that kind of guy, to me, if you're going to take him off the field on third down and you're going to say, okay, he's only going to play 25, 30% of the snaps tops, I don't know that I'm drafting that guy in the first round. To me, I would look at a guy like Jaron Reed for Washington. So those would be my plan A for all the division teams. I would say Jalen Ramsey for Dallas, Ezekiel Elliott for the New York Giants, and then Jaron Reed at 21 for the Washington Redskins.
Excellent, excellent. Well, hey, let's take a quick break, Fran. Let you get a drink of water, and we're trying to load you up with as much as we can get out of you. So let's take a break. Thank our sponsor, ShopForKisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. By logging on to www.ShopForKisses.org's website, you become connected to over 3,000 stores, including all the big ones you already shop at. Every purchase made gets you cash back, and each purchase benefits the Kisses for Kyle Foundation, which helps families dealing with childhood cancer throughout the Delaware Valley. If you have any questions, contact Bob Sullivan at bobsullivan.shopcom@gmail.com or give him a call at 484-319-8043. Also, I want to remind our listeners that our ShopForKisses.org phone lines are open to ask Fran or Chet or I any draft questions. For some reason, I have a real distinct feeling that Chet and I don't have a clue compared to Fran, but that's okay. You can ask us anyway. Give us a call, 929-477-2855.
Hey, Fran, before we get back to draft talk, the Eagles, of course, have a new coach in Doug Peterson. I don't know if you've gotten to meet with him yet, talk with him, but what are your impressions of Peterson as a head coach so far?
Yeah, obviously, look, as a guy, he's awesome. He's great to deal with. I've gotten a chance to interview him a couple times, spoke with him at length out at the scouting combine, and just really a great guy, down-to-earth guy, really relatable to the players. Obviously, as a former NFL player, he understands what these guys go through on a daily, weekly, monthly basis throughout the year. Has been involved with some great coaches. And you look at his background and some of the guys he's worked with and worked under, it's really, really impressive. I'm really excited. And the way that they played offense, when he got hired, I was really anxious to go. Because, look, I had seen what the Chiefs had done and see, you know, I knew that they were doing some creative things offensively. But I didn't really get a sense of it until I went back and studied the tape. And I watched every game over the last two seasons back when he first got hired. And I was really impressed with their run game, the wide variety of ways that they would attack defenses in the run game, a lot of options. But then also a lot of zone, a lot of gap. They did a lot of different things with misdirection and the pistol. A lot more creative, honestly, than what people had seen in Philadelphia the last few years. And everybody thought about the Chip Kelly offense as being very innovative and very creative. And, yeah, the speed tempo certainly had a certain element to it. But I was very, very impressed with what I saw out of the Chiefs the last couple of years and what they had been able to do on offense with, honestly, not great personnel. You know, they didn't have a ton of great receiving threats until they signed Jeremy Maclin this year. You know, they lost Jamaal Charles for a majority of the season this year, and were still able to go on a playoff run with the running game being the focus of their attack. You know, Alex Smith is a very efficient quarterback, but certainly is a little bit more limited physically. It's a really, really – you have to look at that job that they did offensively, and it's a job well done. I'm really, really excited about what the scheme will look like. And then Jim Schwartz on defense. I mean, the guy, his resume speaks for itself and what he's done as a defensive football coach. I'm really excited to see his schemes, his mentality, his attack mentality get paired with some of the personnel that we've got up front. I'm really excited for all of that.
Yeah, I can't wait for that as well. Now, Fran, you mentioned Chip Kelly. I know you work for the Eagles, but, hey, Chip's gone, so level with us. What was your relationship with Chip? Was he as standoffish, as, you know, kind of impersonal, as a lot of people said?
No, you know, I think that those are the kind of things that they get talked about, obviously, after a guy leaves, and that happens everywhere and anywhere. Look, I dealt with Chip every single week. He'd come into the office, and I shot a couple of different segments with him for my show that I produced. On NBC 10, the Eagles game plan, and he was great with us every single week. Come in, and I'd have four or five plays picked out for him to break down on tape, and he'd go up to the telestrator with Ike Reese and break them down, and he was always great with that the last 3 years. So I've got nothing bad to say about Chip.
Okay, cool.
Hey, Frank, a couple local guys I want to ask you about. Tyler Matakevich, 6'1", they're about 238 pounds. A lot of people have him listed down there maybe in a fourth, fifth, you know, he's a third day kind of guy. And also Carl Nesip out of Penn State, 6'6", 245, had a fantastic senior year. Both national award winners. Where do you see these guys going in the draft?
You know, I think that both guys will probably end up on day three. I think Nesip will go before Matakevich. As far as Matakevich, look, he's – here's the thing that he's got to overcome. And actually, I talked to him about this at his pro day. I was out a couple weeks ago. And the thing that he said he's got to overcome, look, and he's done it his whole life. He's short and he's slow. You know, so you can be one of the other. Typically in the NFL, you can be short and still have success. You can be slow at the linebacker position and still have success. But it's rare that you see a player be both and have success. So that'll be the thing that he's going to have to overcome. And it's not just his height. He's just 238 pounds. His arms are really short, and where does that come into play for a linebacker at the point of attack? You know, if you're dealing with an offensive lineman getting on top of you and he's using his length to engulf you in the block, you've got to be able to detach and disengage and slow the football. And if you've got shorter arms, it's tougher to do that. And, you know, he ran 4.8, I think it was a 4.81 at the combine, which is subpar for the linebacker spot. That'll be the big question for him because he's a great tackler. He's instinctive. Obviously, he's been a captain for the last 3 years. He never missed a practice during his time at Temple. I mean, the guy is super durable, just a really fun player to watch, one of the best college football players in the history of the game. So really excited to see how he transitions. And then Nesip, he really just came out of nowhere, just a self-made guy, walked on at Penn State. And what's really interesting about him, you look at the history of Jim Schwartz and some of the players that he's bought in and some of the players that he's worked with over the course of his career as a defensive coach, and you're going to see a lot of defensive ends built like Carl Nesip. And Nesip is, you know, he's 6'7", he's 277 pounds. He tested pretty well at the combine. Not, you know, not over the top, but it was a solid athletic performance at the combine. Was super productive this year, had a ton of sacks, a lot of TFLs. He's got great length and he moves pretty well. You think back, Jim Schwartz drafted Ziggy Ansah in the top five the year the Eagles drafted Lane Johnson. He brought in guys like Devin Taylor and Jason Jones and Kyle Vandenbosch, a lot of guys with length, with height, with movement skills, and Carl Nesip, I think, fits that bill. So he could be a player. Look, he can come home to Philadelphia. He went to Penn State. He's from Westchester. He played at Malvern Prep, so certainly has a history here in the Philadelphia area. That would be a really fun story to see him come back home.
Fran, one other guy I wanted to talk to you about, particularly a local guy out of Penwood High School from Yadin, ended up at Penn State, had some problems with Joe Paterno up there, got cut loose, went to Baylor, was absolutely fantastic at Baylor, has a little off-the-field problems. Where does Sean Oakman, the local kid, where is he going to fall in? He's a heck of a football player.
Little off the field problem would be an understatement, and that's gonna have to work itself out. Obviously, it's a very serious situation, and without even talking about that, that's gonna have to get settled before you even talk about his draft status. But on the field, Oakman's got outstanding size. I mean, he's just under 6'8", 287 pounds. He's got 35¾-inch long arms. I mean, really just great size for the defensive end spot. Some people think he could be a D end in a 3-4 scheme just because he's 287 pounds. I mean, he's got great size. Athletically, he's explosive in a straight line. But transitionally, laterally, he's just not great. And when you try and see him bend the edge, he's not really able to do that. He's a flash player. He's the definition of a flash player in that He'll make a couple plays and make you say, wow, look at that guy go. He comes off the bus and you say, wow, this guy is a top 10 pick, but he just doesn't always play to that. And that's going to be the big thing with him is on the field he was very inconsistent, probably more down than up. And then you factor in the off-field issues, not just with the most recent charge, but then also, as you mentioned, got shown the door at Penn State, had some other issues during his time at Baylor as well, some suspensions and things of that nature. He suspended the season opener this past year for a violation team rule. So, teams are going to have to answer questions about him off the field before he gets trusted to be brought into the fold.
Hey, friend, as you mentioned, the Eagles still do have 7 picks in the 2016 draft. They're going to take a quarterback at number 2, but then they have 6 picks after that, including 1 third-round pick and a couple in the 5th round. Will they target areas of need or just take best player available, or what do you see them doing with those 6 other picks?
Yeah, I think you always want to try and bring the best players in that fit what you're trying to do and get good value. That's what you're really trying to do. You're trying to find the best value available. And for what you need. So, need obviously plays a factor in. If you've got your star quarterback, you're not going to take a quarterback because he's the best player on your board. That's just not how it works. But, I think you're always going to look at need a little bit, but you're always going to try and take the best players, the best value that you can. So, I wouldn't expect them to say, if we draw this draft up right now and say, all right, in round 3, they're going to take a guard. In round 5, they're going to take a receiver, and then they're going to take a linebacker, and then they're going to take a safety. I don't think that's how they're going to plan it out going into the draft. I think it's going to be, let's see how the board falls. Let's see who falls to us. Again, I mentioned earlier, this is a really deep draft in a lot of spots. So, when they go on the clock in the 3rd round, I expect that there's probably going to be some players on the board that they had 2nd-round grades on that will be really, really exciting. So, and that's why, and Howie Roseman talked about today, they really did not want to part with that 2nd, 3rd-round pick because they knew they were going to be able to find a player that would be able to make an impact this year in 2016. So, whether that's a wide receiver and you look at a guy, could a guy like Tyler Boyd from Pitt, fall down that far? I would be, you'll hear me screaming for joy from the Novacare complex if they're able to find a way to get Tyler Boyd in round 3. Could a guy like DeMarcus Robinson, who's got, first round talent, but obviously had a lot of issues down in Florida. He's suspended 4 times in the last 3 years during his time with the Gators. His uncle Marcus was a longtime vet receiver, was a former big-time recruit, had a lot of big plays, was a great all-around player. Was a good blocker, good route runner, good athlete, good hands, the speed. He's a good full package. He's just got to clean it up off the field. And if you trust him, could you bring him in the 3rd round or the 5th round and have him make your football team? What about a guy like Braxton Miller at the wide receiver position? Aaron Burbridge from Michigan State. A lot of really interesting players at the wide receiver position in the middle rounds. You look at the linebacker spot. We talked about Matakevich. Where would he fit in? Josh Forrest from Kentucky is a player that I'm really a big fan of. He's a former wide receiver, but he's got great size. He's 6'3", 249 pounds. He's got long arms, really instinctive. He's physical. He plays the run really, really well. It's an interesting group overall. I'm very, very excited to watch how this draft plays out because, obviously, look, you get the quarterback, you feel good. And if that quarterback pans out, and that's why this deal was the right move because, you don't, unless you have a quarterback, you're always trying to get one. And if this guy works out and wins the Super Bowl and puts the Eagles in position to win one, now you're feeling good about this draft regardless. But you take your quarterback in the top 2, and then you get a, let's see what you got with the rest of this draft. I'm excited to see the type of players they bring in here.
Yeah, I can't wait. Hey, friend, I think we do have a caller right now. So if we do, caller, who are you, and what do you want to ask friend?
Hey, it's Fred Hugo. How are you?
Hey, Fred.
Hey, Fred.
I have a question. Hey. Man, you're awesome, by the way. Bill Furman and Chet turned me on to seeing your stuff, and I watch it all the time every time I can. So it's awesome.
Thanks, Fred. I appreciate that.
Welcome. My question is, in the 3rd round with that 1 pick, are there any offensive linemen to look out for that would possibly be there that would be a pick that the Eagles might take?
I think it's the offensive line group is really interesting because I think I mentioned earlier that there's great depth, and so trying to pick exactly which one's going to fall is going to be tough because I think once you get past a certain amount of players there, then it's kind of a grab bag, and it's going to come down to individual teams and how they see these players, and then we'll see how they fall off the board. But, could a guy like Josh Garnett, who, You know, some people have mocked it as early as round one in some cases at some point during the offseason. You know, could he fall down to round three? People I've talked to over the last couple weeks think that's entirely possible, that he could fall down to round three. Could a guy like Cody Whitehair be that situation? And if not, they might be pie-in-the-sky scenarios. What about a guy like Joe Dahl, who, again, I really love that kid from Washington State. You know, he's 6'4", 304 pounds, played tackle throughout his career at Washington State, but early on he was a guard, and a lot of people see him as a guard in the next level. You know, could he come in? He could be a guy that could start right away, honestly. Watching it, he was down at the Senior Bowl, a really, really intriguing talent, you know, at the position. A guy like Connor McGovern from Mizzou, similar situation, played both tackle and guard during his time there. Jermaine Effetti from Texas A&M, played some tackle, played some guard throughout his career. He's outstanding upside for that kid. I mean, you know, he needs some refinement with his hands and with his feet, but he's got great quickness. He's got really heavy hands. He's got great length. His size is outstanding. A really intriguing talent at the offensive line spot. Isaac Seumalo from Oregon State is a really intriguing player, a junior that declared for the draft. I think would be a great fit in the Eagles scheme. Nick Martin, Zach Martin's little brother from Notre Dame, could play guard center. Graham Glasgow from Michigan, they've reportedly shown some interest in. He's played a couple different positions throughout his career. I mentioned Max Turk earlier. Hey, it's a really, really intriguing group, a lot of depth in the interior offensive line. So to answer your question, in short, yeah, there's definitely going to be some players there that should be of good value there in round three. I'm excited to see who they decide to bring in.
Yeah, that's good to hear. And the versatility of the lineman. I know when Andy was here, that's what he liked. So if we're going anywhere near back to that's awesome. So thanks for answering my question. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Fred.
All right, Fred. Thanks for the call. Hey, Fred, I have one other guy. Speaking of guys dropping down, and I know this guy is injured, but this is a first-round draft pick. If he can come back, Jalen Smith, the linebacker out of Notre Dame, is he too damaged at this point?
Well, and it's kind of like Miles Jack, though, it's going to be up to every team. And you know, I have no idea officially what it looks like, but a lot of the rumors, you guys remember the story of J.R. Reed, who was a mid-round pick of the Eagles back in the early 2000s. And he ripped up his leg when he was playing with his dog in his backyard during the offseason, and he had that drop foot injury, right? And a lot of people are guessing or estimating that might be the injury that Jalen Smith has. He tore his ACL and his MCL on New Year's Eve. So you're dealing with the knee rehab. If he's got this drop foot, which is basically nerve damage on the leg that affects the mobility of the foot, and guys really have a lot of trouble coming back from an injury like that, not just for 1 year, but just permanently, and it's something that stays with you. So, you know, if that's the case, it's really just a heartbreaking story because, honestly, guys, this guy was a top three pick if he had stayed healthy. Just an outstanding all-around football player. You know, at 6'2", he came into the combine at 223, but that's because he hadn't been able to work out. He hadn't been able to do anything. He played in the 240s during his time in Notre Dame, and he ran like a deer. I was there at the Temple game and watched him make plays sideline to sideline, end line to end line. Was just an outstanding football player for them. Started 39 games throughout his career. Was a pass rusher, a coverage player, a great player in the box. There's less projection. We talked about Miles Jack and all the ways that he was used. There's some projection with Miles Jack in terms of playing in the box. He didn't do it full time. Jalen Smith showed that he can do it. You know, so that's why I think a lot of people, you could make the argument that Jalen Smith was a better player, a better prospect than Miles Jack. It's just heartbreaking to see that injury. It's tough to see. Hopefully you root for him to come back, but every team's going to see that differently. Is the value worth it in round four? But you're knowing that you're not getting him back this year. And will you ever get him back? Are you ever going to get that return on investment? That's going to be the question that every team's going to have to ask, and it's going to be one of the big storylines next week.
Hey, Fran, I just want to mention that about an hour or so after the trade, I got a text from a nephew of mine who happens to be a Cowboys fan, by the way, and he asked me to rate the Eagles' trade today on a scale of 1 to 10. And to be honest, I wasn't crazy about it. I gave it a 3. I said, 3. They gave up too much, and, you know, Wentz isn't a can't-miss guy. But after hearing what Ron Jaworski had to say about Wentz and hearing, you know, you tout the positives, the upside for what we think will be the quarterback that they choose, Wentz, I'm feeling a little better about it now. So, you know, hopefully it will all work out.
Oh, thank you, Chad. Honestly, the fact that you look at how – it's like I said earlier, they made this trade today. They still have 7 picks in this draft. They still have 8. And now you've got the ability to draft a quarterback. When was the last time the Eagles were able to select a quarterback in the top five. It hasn't happened. You know, the last time they picked the last time they picked in the top five was Lane Johnson. There were no quarterbacks that anybody was trying to take, you know, in that draft. There was three tackles in the top four, you know, and a defensive end that didn't work out. So you're in a position now to grab a quarterback. You have a veteran now that can start this year. You feel pretty good that you're not going to be as bad record-wise as you were a year ago. So if this team, you know, this as bad as that team was last fall, they were picking 13th overall when it was all said and done. If they're even incrementally better, they're picking in the middle of the first round next year. Obviously, they won't have that first round pick, but it's in terms of the experience, the talent, now you're bringing that young quarterback along. Now you're trying to work and try and flip more picks. You're in a great situation to be in, and hopefully you're never going to be in this position again to acquire a prospect to the caliber of Carson Wentz or Jared Goff, whoever that quarterback ends up being at number two. You're striking while the iron's hot. You've got the ability to make that move now. We saw last year how hard it would be to move up to number two to draft a guy like Marcus Mariota. It was, you know, you need two to tango. You had the opportunity to do it with Cleveland. They were looking to move down. You take the opportunity. You don't have a quarterback yet that you feel great about. Let's go try and get one to build for the future. It's a great trade. They got great value in return with all the picks that they were able to get back as well. Obviously, you get two, and then you get a four for next year to make up for some of the loss. It's a great deal.
Well, Fran, we're running out of time, so let's give you an opportunity to run down again for all our listeners where they can listen to you and see all that you have going on, and give them a quick rundown again before we have to close it out.
Absolutely. Thanks, Bill. So you can follow me on Twitter at FDuffy3. That's where I post everything, all the podcasts I'm on, all the articles I write, all the videos I produce, all that goes there. So you can follow me on Twitter at FDuffy3. I'm on three podcasts, so you can kind of pick and choose. The one that I host for myself is Eagle Eye in the Sky. I always have a ton of great guests on, you know, guys like Tony Dungy and Mike Mayock and you know, a lot of former players. I had John Bunning on for a lot of you guys that were around during that time. I had John Bunning on a few weeks ago on a great conversation talking about linebacker play, really trying to focus on X's and O's and the heart of the game of football. So I've got Eagle Eye in the Sky. I'm on the Journey to the Draft podcast, which is all draft talk all the time, all year round. And that I do with the Eagles. And then I have another one with former NFL offensive lineman Ross Tucker, and that's called the College Draft Podcast. You can find all of those on, you know, iTunes or Stitcher or Podbay. Wherever you get podcasts, you can go. And for the Eagles ones, you can always get them as well on PhiladelphiaEagles.com or the Eagles mobile app. So, again, yeah, just at FDuffy3 on Twitter, and I really appreciate you guys having me on.
All right, Fran. Absolutely fantastic. It went too fast. We could do this all night long.
Yeah, great job, Fran.
No question about it.
All right, Fran. Appreciate it. And go Birds.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it. Thanks. Go Birds.
Take care.
All right. Okay, Chet, let's get real quick. I want to add our signing updates at Carl's Cards. We're not going to go through the whole list because we're running a little short on time, but I did want to put out there that Carl has snuck in a great signing. Well, first of all, he's got John Cappelletti coming in on this Saturday. But the next Saturday, April 30th, he has added the Villanova Seniors. Ryan Arciodiocano, I'll never get that right, Kevin Rafferty, Henry Lowe, and Patrick Farrell will all be in the store on April the 30th. And I understand that Daniel Akefu is out of town doing some NBA things, but he is likely to be brought in in the near future. So Villanova Seniors on the 30th, John Cappelletti this Saturday, the 23rd. So we'll shoot on through that. Mr. Chesko, as we try to get caught back up, a parting shot for you, sir.
Yeah, I was going to say something about what happened Monday night at the Flyers game, how shameful and downright pathetic that was, and how it's another black eye for Philly fans, but that's been said by so many other folks over the last 48 hours, so I'll take a different approach. It's pretty obvious at this point the Flyers are not going to upset the top-seeded Capitals. The Caps are really, really good, but this still has been an overall positive season for the Orange and Black. They brought in a new coach with a new system and weren't expected to be a playoff team in year one. They started off slowly, but then things began to click in January. Rookie Shane Gostisbehere, called up in November, proved right away that he was a keeper. Wayne Simmonds had, I think, his best year. Steve Mason, despite my doubts, truly looked like a number one goalie down the stretch. Now, the Flyers approached pretty much every game since February like a playoff contest, and maybe just burn them out. I don't know. But they finally did get into the playoffs anyway, the final week of the regular season. Yeah, the series against the Caps has been a big disappointment, but with guys like center Travis Konecny and defenseman Ivan Provorov, Sam Moran, and Travis Sanheim waiting in the wings, and Ron Hextall, probably the best of the current general managers in Philly, the future does look bright for the Flyers.
Well, and I, too, was going to talk briefly about the antics that took place at the Wells Fargo Center, but I will skip that as well. As you said, it's been well documented. But I will go back to last night, Chet, and I have to tell you, it is just about impossible to get me to turn off a ballgame. Well, as I'm watching the Phillies give up home run after home run to just about every other guy that came to the plate, and they're down 11-0. They've given up, I believe it was 6 home runs at the time. And the few people that were at Citizens Bank Park were Mets fans. It was a travesty. How soon we have forgotten what we had in the recent past. And unfortunately, there's a lot of growing up to do. There's going to be a lot of lean times here, I believe. But it was very sad, and I actually turned off the Phillies game for the first time than I can possibly remember.
Yeah, I can't blame you. But you know what? 2018 or so is going to be a different story. I'm telling you, 2 years from now, that team is going to be a contender, and hopefully the same with the Flyers.
I hope you're right. I'm gonna hang in there. But like I say, pretty tough to swallow last night.
Yes, it is. Hey, by the way, back to the Eagles. We still have more Eagles talk in us. And next Wednesday, which is draft night eve, we have, I think, making his third visit to the program, Brandon Lee Gowton of Bleeding Green Nation. So that's a good one for you again next week. Who knows, maybe the Eagles will have made another deal between now and then.
Well, I think there'll certainly be a lot to talk about once we digest all this that's happened here in the last 3 or 4 hours. There's certainly going to be a lot to talk about come next week. And Brandon Lee Gowton always prepared, and we'll certainly have good stuff.
Looking forward to it.
All right, so we're at the top of the hour, and we'd like to thank our special guest, Fran Duffy, for joining us, Carl's Cards and Collectibles for their continuing support of the show, Mary Flanagan, our marketing extraordinaire behind the scenes, our sponsor, shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. For Jim Chetchesko, this is Bill Furman. We hope you enjoyed the show. We'll join Philly Press Box Radio on Wednesday, April 27th at 7 p.m. with Bleeding Green Nation's Brandon Lee Gowton. You can listen through our Facebook page or on the Internet at www.blogtalkradio.com/Philly Press Box Radio and on both iTunes and Stitcher. High hopes, Philadelphia sports fans. Chet, this is for you.